Support for WPR comes from Lawrence University in Appleton, a national liberal arts college and conservatory, offering an engaging global education with funding for internships, research, study abroad, and more. Lawrence.edu.
Support for WPR comes from Isthmus Partners, an asset management firm providing comprehensive financial planning and tailored investment solutions for long-term growth and capital preservation. More at IsthmusPartnersLLC.com.
Happy to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, and we're going to start our program today by taking a look at the search for the ivory-billed woodpecker. And we're going to be talking with a guy who's had a lot of experience because he's been part of that search and has had some amazing results. Part of it, of those results, are actually chronicled in another book. Our guest is Bobby Harrison of Huntsville, Alabama. He's an award-winning nature photographer. He's a college professor and in 2004 helped rediscover the ivory-billed woodpecker in a swamp of eastern Arkansas. Bobby is also the keynote speaker for the Milwaukee Audubon Society's 27th Annual Natural Landscapes Conference coming up Saturday, February 17th, this coming Saturday at Cardinal Stritch University's Bonaventure Hall. We'll tell you some more about that conference and about when Bobby will be speaking. But certainly, we're going to focus a bit on his work as a nature photographer and his search for the ivory-billed woodpecker. And the book that I referred to is titled The Grail Bird, The Rediscovery of the Ivory-billed Woodpecker. And it's written by a good friend of Bobby's, Tim Gallagher. And so we'll learn a little bit about Tim as well, I expect, as we talk with Bobby Harrison today. If you want to join in and have a question or comment, you are most welcome to do so, either about the bird or about maybe about nature photography or about his work. Feel free at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or in the Madison area at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and comments. Bobby Harrison with us by phone. Bobby, hi. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
My pleasure. Happy to do it.
Tell you what, why has there been such a to-do about the ivory-billed woodpecker?
Well, you know, the ivory bill is really the grail bird. It's the holy grail of bird watchers. It's the bird that most bird watchers want to see. It was thought extinct for 60 years by professional ornithologists. There have been people coming out of the woods for decades saying that they have seen this bird, and ornithologists would continue to tell them, you must be mistaken, the ivory bill is extinct. So, but the fact that people were coming out of the woods saying they've seen this bird gave people hope that it was still out there. And at 17, I first read about the grail bird. I read James Tanner's thesis on the bird that he wrote in between 1937 and 1939. And I believe the bird was out there and had been looking for it for 33 years when we actually found it.
Yeah, you teamed up with Tim Gallagher on a pretty exciting adventure.
Well, you know, Tim and I had known each other 14 years before we realized that we both had an interest in the ivory bill. I just happened to mention to him one day that I had returned from the Pearl River and there had been an ivory bill sighting down there, and he just said, are you interested in ivory bills? And I said, yeah, and I said, well, me too. He said, me too. And we started exchanging research that we had been doing over the last few decades. But we had known each other 14 years and just never discussed it with one another.
You know, it's interesting that people were really scoffed at when they said they had seen the ivory bill, and even some ornithologists. It was George Lowry, wasn't it, who took a picture?
George Lowry had come in contact with a man by the name of Fielding Lewis, who had taken some photographs in 1971, believed those photographs to be real, which I believe they are real photographs of ivory bills as well, but was scoffed at for believing that that bird could still be out there.
And so I think that probably hindered other people, ornithologists' search. Even if you saw one, you'd better have it on film.
There was John K. Terrace, for example, had seen an ivory bill down in Florida, and he did not report it for many, many, many years later. for that fear that he would be ostracized by the professional ornithological community. John Dennis, who is a man who searched for this bird, saw birds, was also ostracized for saying that he had seen the bird.
Yeah. Well, describe the bird for those who aren't familiar with it.
Well, this is just an incredible bird. It is in Arkansas, we expect the bird to be about 20 and a half inches long from tip of tail to tip of bill. The further south they get, for example, in Florida, they're 19 and a half inches from tip of tail to tip of bill. It's a black woodpecker with white trailing edges to its wings from the underside and top side, and also from the underside has a white leading edge of the wing. And when the wing is folded up, those white trailing edges form white patches on the back. It has what I call suspender stripes going up the back and then alongside the neck up to the head. And it has a ivory-colored bill that's 3 inches long from the gape to the tip of the bill. You know, that bill is three-quarter inches thick at the base of the bill and an inch wide. So it's the male has a red crest and the female has a black crest, which is the only woodpecker in North America where the female has a black crest.
And it's, I assume that the pileated or pileated woodpecker is sort of a close relative of it, but certainly not as large and as...
Well, the pileated is a Dryocopis woodpecker, okay. and the ivory bill is a Campephalus woodpecker. There are Campephalus woodpeckers are from the New World, and there are a number of Campephalus woodpeckers in the New World. The three most prominent are the imperial woodpecker, the ivory bill Campephalus principalis, and the Cuban ivory bill, which are all related.
Yeah. Charlie in Jonesdale, Wisconsin, has a comment or question for you. Charlie, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yes, hi. Thanks for letting me on. Is it true that whole swamp area now is closed off to the public?
No, it's not closed off now. It was right after the announcement. There was a big fear that people would come down and just really invade the swamp. A few people did come down. Most of them, once they got there and saw the cottonmouths in the swamps, decided not to go in. But those restrictions were lifted in May of 2006. And actually, anyone can go in. You just need to be aware of the environment you're going into.
Mm-hmm. All right.
I see. Has anyone else reported seeing it?
Well, there have been, right after we had saw the bird, Cornell came down with a crew, and the first week of April, they had six ornithologists, had five sightings. There's been a total of about 18 sightings during the search when, you know, we were keeping this quiet. There have been a number of reports since then. There have not been any reports I know of this search season.
Hmm. All right.
Well, I would like to say I'm kind of skeptical because no one else is coming up with any photos, and everyone else, when they went in looking, no one's found it.
Well, actually, it's been seen by a number of people, and skeptics are okay. And that keeps us out there trying to get those images. This bird is a wary bird. If you look at all the historical documents, everyone writes about this bird being very wary, avoiding people. You have to keep in mind when Tanner studied the birds in the Singer Tract, they had studied the birds in an area that had been closed to hunting for more than 10 years. And even those birds were very nervous around people. So this bird likes its solitude. And if you look at all the historical documentation, it shows that. And putting a lot of people in the swamp is not the best thing for this bird to try to find it.
Yeah.
And it's going to be very difficult to get images of this bird until we find a roost or a nest.
Oh. Thanks very much, Charlie, for calling. If you'd like to join in with your own questions or comments, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or in the Madison area at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call. We'll be glad to get you on the line. Well, tell us about your own personal hunt for this ivory-billed woodpecker.
Well, as I mentioned earlier, I became interested in this bird when I was 17, did a lot of research on it. And I can tell you I've spent more time in libraries researching this bird than I actually have in the field. And I guess that's one of the reasons I think that we found the bird is we continue to follow up leads by people who said they had seen the bird, and one of those leads panned out, and Tim and I saw the bird together. I'm currently still working in Arkansas and in Florida as well. My search tends to deal more with working with decoys. On September 4th of 2004, I actually got a bird that flew by one of the decoys. I have it on video, and there is a diagnostic pattern in that video of the ivory bill as it flies through. Though it's still a very bad video, and we need better documentation.
We'll take some more calls here. John in Belleville is joining us now. John, hello to you. Thank you for calling.
You're welcome. I guess I would be curious to hear about the bird's longevity, what they think about its home range, if they actually think this is just a holdout, or if there's a population or a breeding population, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Well, we really don't know how long ivory bills live. If it's in line with other woodpeckers of that size, like the pileated and some of the birds from Asia that are this size, probably not more than 12, maybe 15 years age and length, which means the bird that we saw in Arkansas would have had to have been hatched around 1991 if it was on its deathbed, basically. I know that there are at least two different individuals in Bio de Vue. I've seen a male, and I know I've seen either a female or immature male, and I say that because of the time of year that I saw it, and immature males do not get red in their crest until 3 months after leaving the nest, and I saw the bird in June, so it's possible the bird I saw could have been an immature male, but it was at least two different individuals I've seen. And I'm sorry, I've lost the second part of your question.
I was curious about home range or what you think their territories are.
Well, in the Singer Tract, when Tanner studied the birds there, it was about 6 square miles, but during the breeding season down to maybe 1 or 2 square miles. Because of the habitat, we believe the range may be anywhere between 11 and 13 square miles in eastern Arkansas. In Florida, perhaps less, because there tends to be more hardwoods along the river bottom itself.
So now you've mentioned Florida a couple times. There's belief that there's a population there as well?
Yeah, Jeff Hill from Auburn University went to Florida shortly after we made our announcement in 2005 and actually saw birds there. They've had the same problem of getting video, and they're working very diligently down there to get better documentation. But their sound recordings are extremely good, and their sound recordings indicate multiple birds down there, as many as three or four on one tape. So they've got a good population, I think, down there.
Hmm. Interesting.
Wow. Okay, thank you.
Thanks very much for calling. And in a minute or two, we have a sound of the ivory-billed woodpecker, and we'll be playing that. It comes from Cornell originally, but we took it from Lang Elliott's CD, The Songs of Wild Birds, and we'll play that for you in just a minute. I'm Larry Mueller. Our guest today is Bobby Harrison of Huntsville, Alabama, an award-winning nature photographer, college professor, who in 2004 rediscovered for himself the ivory-billed woodpecker in a swamp of eastern Arkansas. I'm Larry Mueller, Jim Packard, our producer, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking today with Bobby Harrison about the search for the ivory-billed woodpecker. Certainly, if you have questions or comments for him, either about the woodpecker or about his own work as a professional wildlife photographer, nature photographer, and college professor, please feel free to join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. Or if you are in the Madison area, you can reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and comments. And Bobby, talk a little bit more about the you mentioned the swamp, and it's not the best place in the world or the safest place in the world to venture out in. Talk about your own experiences in the swamp after the ivory bill.
Well, I have to confess that the snakes and the bugs and the mosquitoes, they really don't bother me. The swamp is filled with cottonmouths. And I used to think they were very aggressive, and what I've really discovered is they're just curious. and they will see your canoe, and they'll come over and try to crawl in the canoe with you. And during the summertime, the mosquitoes will just eat you alive. You take lots of mosquito repellent in with you. The water level's really low, so you do a lot of dragging of the canoe, and of course, you're always in mud, at least, you know, halfway up to your knee. But the thing I guess I hate the most is the frogs. I am just not a frog person at all, and I just don't care for them. I don't mind the snakes crawling in the canoe. It's just when the frogs jump in. That just bothers me.
Well, you did have a snake in your vehicle, if I'm not mistaken. Tell that story.
Tim and I were down in the White River, and it was early spring, and I say these snakes are very curious. They actually come up on the roads to sun in early March, late March, because it's, you know, you still have cold snaps. And I stopped to actually look at one of the snakes and got out, and it came up under the vehicle and climbed up into the and went up into the engine compartment. And of course, Tim sitting in the passenger compartment saying, "Do you think it could get in?" And I said, "No." And then I actually, after it got in, up into the engine compartment, I got in the vehicle to move it back and forth. Tim had gotten out by this time. And I was somewhat afraid the thing might be kind of hanging right under the doors. And after I'm stepping high to get into the vehicle, and I get in. And after I get, I'm thinking, well, could it have gotten in the passenger compartment?
Oh, boy.
fortunately, it did not. I backed the vehicle back and forth and
finally
came
dropped
to a screeching
down.
Halt, and finally it lowered itself and came out of the vehicle. Tim suggested I take it to get an oil change.
Barbara in Spring Green, it's your turn. Hi, Barbara.
Hi, thanks so much. It's a thrill to be able to speak with Mr. Harrison. I'm actually heading down to Arkansas in April as a part of the Cornell volunteer program.
And oh, congratulations.
Thanks. Yeah, I'm quite excited and doing my research and read all the related books, but my first question was about, you know, just preparation. Any advice? You just given a little bit, I think, prepared for mosquitoes and snakes. But I also had one comment about the skeptics. I'd like to encourage all of those who are really skeptical about it to go out and try to photograph a bird, a wary bird on the wing, you know, high up in the woods or out of a canoe or something. I think people find it hard that there aren't more photographs until they've tried to take photographs of birds under circumstances like that.
Well, I've heard people talk about using the auto focus. Well, you know, you're in very thick woods there, and it simply doesn't work simply because the autofocus wants to keep focusing on those closest trees to you. Another thing is that this bird moves incredibly fast. On the video I have, it shows a wing beat of right at 10 wing beats a second. And the speed of this bird is absolutely incredible, but just like historical documentations talk about.
Mm. Excellent. Yeah.
So any other advice for Barbara as she ventures down there?
When you're on the river, you'll be in the White River. If you're down in the river itself, be sure to wear a life jacket. I just had a very close call in the Choctahatchee where I capsized a canoe, had thousands of dollars worth of equipment get wet in a watertight case.
Ooh.
And that leaked. But it was a very dangerous situation. I'm very happy I had my life jacket on, or I wouldn't be here talking to you today.
Thanks very much. Great advice.
It's not for the faint of heart. You'll be at a time where you can get wet, get very cold, be aware of hypothermia.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, Barbara. And Barb in Rhinelander has a comment, so let's go there. Hi, Barb.
Hi. I like this show. This is good. Sort of science fiction type plus the reality. I'm a fan of Laura Erickson's on public radio, and I wrote a poem for her when they first came out with the sighting of the woodpecker, and I just wanted to read it to you.
Oh, fine. Great.
Okay. Woodpecker of the ivory bill returned to give birders a thrill. They gathered from near and far to all exclaim, "Why, there you are." That's all.
Thank you.
Thank you, Barb.
You're welcome.
And, by the way, Laura will be on this program next month before the Audubon dinner that is going to be held in Madison. And I'll be taking part in that dinner as well, and Laura will be on, talk about her owl, and I think bring her owl with her right to the station here and in the studio with me. So it won't be an ivory-billed woodpecker, but it'll be an owl, a bird nevertheless. Thanks, Barb. Chuck in Holy Hill, it's your turn. Hi, Chuck.
Hi, boy, this is a wonderful program. And first of all, Mr. Harrison, do you have a father named George Harrison who's quite a bird man over here in the town of Richfield?
No, but I know George, and we have tried to see if we're related, but no way, because I actually have family from Iowa and Minnesota.
Oh, well, you're related when it comes to birds of a feather, because you guys are right in the feathers of them. So,
George has been one of my favorite writers for decades.
Indeed.
Thanks.
And the other question I was thinking of going down to Cuba, and as a reason, you got to have a good reason to go to Cuba. And I was wondering, any reports from the Oriente Highlands of any ivory billed down there in that neck of the woods?
There are still rumors coming out of Cuba. I would love an invitation from the Cuban government to come down and search for ivory bills there.
I don't think you need an invitation. All you need to do, because our government is the big problem, you know, trying to get to Cuba because we still have that embargo. And just if you have a good reason to go down there, you can go down there. You just have to have a specific reason for going down there.
Well, if I had an invitation, that would be easier to get the government to let me go.
Yeah, that's for sure. Thanks, Chuck, for calling. And John in McGuanago, it's your turn. Hi, John.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call. Mr. Harrison, I saw and heard a presentation by you at the Midwest Birding Symposium in the Quad Cities in, I think, October 2005. Certainly a believer and an advocate, and appreciate all your work.
Thank you.
Really an interesting presentation at that time. Two questions, if you would, please. Number one, would you comment on the contribution of collection of birds, killing them by museums in the past, in the demise, perhaps, of this woodpecker? And is, my specific question, is collecting still going on? That's number one issue. Number two issue, can you comment about the David Sibley controversy about this video of yours?
Okay, let's take the first one. What was the first thing? Go back to the
birds
first
in the museums.
Yes, okay, collectors. There was... this bird was never very numerous, and collectors definitely had an adverse effect on this bird because museum collectors would go into an area and actually wipe out populations on a given river. So that was very detrimental to the birds.
No.
The second part of your question.
Had to do with the video, David Sibley?
David Sibley, yes. Sibley has seen my video. And I went through an entire explanation on my video as to what I was looking at. The bird's actually flying away from the camera, and I know this because I have done measurements because I know the angle of the camera. I've done measurements. The bird is flying away at about a 30 to 45 degree angle. And after I went through my explanation, he just simply said the bird looked like it was flying toward him. So obviously he was not interested in the explanation or the facts about the video. Mm. But that's okay. You know, Sibley, I've looked at his drawings. I've actually put them alongside the Luno video, and what he has drawn is background fields. And as you go through the video, you go through his drawings. The dark edges he has put on that wing is actually in the background, remains in the background as the bird flies through the frame. And I'm surprised a number of ornithologists have not looked at this, recognized it, or commented on it. But Sibley has drawn background fields as part of the bird's wings, and it's not part of the bird itself that's flying through the video.
Oh, interesting. John, thank you.
I'll go over that during my presentation.
Yeah, talk a little bit about your presentation coming up. You'll be at the Natural Landscape Conference at Cardinal Stritch University at Bonaventure Hall. It's from the Milwaukee Audubon Society. And when will you be speaking?
I will be speaking at 9 o'clock in the morning on the 17th.
On the 17th.
Yeah, at Bonaventure Hall.
Bonaventure Hall. And I should just mention, there are, during the conference, there are speakers from, aside from yourself, from government, other academics, community groups, the private sector, and I know attendees can choose the speakers they wish to hear and select talks from the three concurrent thematic lines. One is landscaping naturally, another is restoring the landscape, and the third is cultural heritage of the landscape. And I know there are going to be a lot of topics explored at this particular conference, and I would invite people to go online to MilwaukeeAudubon.org, MilwaukeeAudubon.org, to register for the conference and to find out more about it. And at 9 o'clock in the morning on the 17th, you'll have a chance to hear Bobby Harrison. Are you going to show your video then, too?
I certainly will. I'll show the video I shot on September 4th, and also I will go over the Leno video in relationship to Sibley's drawings and point out the discrepancies in Sibley's drawings.
Okay. Bob in Marshfield, it's your turn now. Hi, Bob.
Hi there. This bird you're talking about, a year ago when I was deer hunting, I had a pair of birds, woodpeckers, and they got a crown, right? And they were 10 feet from me for putting in an hour. And they had a yellow bill and their woodpecker with a crown on, and they looked just like the one you show on TV.
Well, I wish you had got a video or photographs.
Yeah, I wish I would have had something along with me.
Well, it might have been, they were probably pileated woodpeckers. Wouldn't you guess, Bobby?
Well, it's very possible if they were there that long. One thing is certain about the ivory bill. It is a bird that likes its solitude and has typically always avoided the people when there's been an encounter in the swamp. And that's been the problem with getting images of it.
I saw some pictures of you in Tim's book, and you're pretty well camouflaged when you go out there.
Well, you know, I'm looking for any edge that will give me just a few more seconds to get an image. And while I haven't been able to get photographs of the ivory bill yet, I've certainly scared the hell out of a lot of duck hunters.
Well, you know what? I promised that we would play the song of the ivory bill, and I believe I have it set up here. So let's do that, and then we'll go back to the phones. And again, you can join in at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. See if I have it up. And again, this comes from Lang Elliott's CD, The Songs of Wild Birds, but I think he describes where he got the song of the ivory bill.
Here is a recording from the Cornell Lab of Ornithology, made in 1935 in the bottomland hardwoods of northern Louisiana.
And that's the song of the ivory bill, Bobby.
That's correct.
It's a little different song.
It is, and it really does. You know, people call this a Kent call because a lot of the old timers would say it sounded like the word Kent. To me, it really sounds like a tin horn toot that was described by Arthur Allen and Tanner. And I'm sure you've seen these little tin horns.
Yep.
I had one when I was a kid, and it does have that little tin horn sound to it. And I've heard the call both in Arkansas and in Florida.
Oh, you have heard the call?
I have. It was not the Cornell tape. It wasn't, but it was individual Kent calls, as they're referred to, on both occasions. I actually heard the bird on March 9th. Of 2004, where Tim and I had seen it just a few days earlier, and I saw it I heard it on October 6th of 2006 down on the Choctahatchee River.
And the federal government, once this came out, the government, to its credit, I believe, put up some money to purchase the land where the ivory bill was seen in Arkansas. Did it not?
Well, it did. One of the things that is not really really got circulated is the Nature Conservancy really kicked into gear, and they got out there and started purchasing land. They got interest-free loans that people put up for them to go out and start purchasing land to add to the habitat that existed there. And this was really not new property that they were adding to their plan. They just sped up the plan that was already in existence to add property to the Cache River and to the drainage around the Cache and Bayou de Vue. And they've done a tremendous job of going out and getting the right pieces of property to keep that ecosystem intact. Can't say enough good things about the Nature Conservancy.
Let's go to Bill in Minong next. Bill, hello to you.
Good afternoon, or good morning.
Good morning.
My question would be, obviously, if they were thought to be extinct for 60 years or so, the population was much larger at one time. Do we know the cause of the decline of the population of the ivory bill and chances of turning that around? And I'll take my answer off the air.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, now we really don't know what the original population was. We know that it was a common bird locally, which means that in certain river bottoms it was seen on a regular basis for those who knew where to find it and how to look for it. Well, we also know that the collectors at the turn of the 20th century, the latter part of the 1800s and early 1900s, just decimated the populations. We have no real idea how many birds it would take to have a viable population, but I believe the bird really exists in numerous river bottoms across the South. All these river bottoms are connected via waterways that are green along the edge of them. I personally believe the bird is on a increase simply because over the past decade, there's been numerous reports of ivory bills, more and more sightings. And I think the only way that is possible is because the bird is increasing in numbers. Forests have done nothing but get better since the late 50s and early 60s. We have forests now that are extensive enough that can support this bird. So we really need to think about how we're handling lumbering in this country, how we're, especially in the Southeast, and how we're going to keep those forests intact for this bird. But I think it's very possible this bird could make a very good recovery as long as we do not continue to try to destroy it.
Yeah. What's the most important thing about the rediscovery of the ivory bill, in your opinion?
Well, I think it's the attention that that it has gotten in the sense of conservation needs. And there are people who are not even bird watchers, who have not been that into the environment, realize that, you know, as much as we have done to try to destroy this bird, it's hung on. Life has hung on. And it makes us aware that, you know, there are things out there we just don't know about, and we need to protect our environment to ensure that those things continue to be with us.
How did you happen to get involved with nature photography?
I was I was just a young kid. I was around 15. My dad was a truck driver, and there was some damaged goods that he had gotten years earlier, and one of the things was a film developing kit, which laid in his shop for years and years. And I saw it one day, told him I wanted to develop film, and he got me some chemicals, and I, of course, would run everybody out of the kitchen at night and and got into photography that way. And by the time I was 17, I was very interested in nature anyway, and it was only natural that I combined nature photography. And by the time I was in my late 20s, I had narrowed down to bird photography, and that has always been my real passion. And, of course, the big question is, why haven't I gotten a photograph of an ivory bill woodpecker? I've seen the bird 5 times, but it's always fleeting glimpses of the bird. And it's just, I actually carry a video camera with me running all the time now.
And you actually carried it, had it on your head, didn't you?
Yes, helmet cam. It was a great idea, but just didn't quite work out. it was just because of the weight of the battery. The camera wasn't that bad, but the weight of the battery, when you put that all together, it was pretty heavy, and it was kind of, after a couple hours, it was like your head's been driven down between your shoulders. And just, it was great in theory, just didn't work too well in practice.
It didn't work too well in practice. What are the best tricks of getting good shots of birds?
Oh, well, knowing your subject, that is the key. You know, you need good camera equipment. You need lens focal lengths that are long enough that you could reach out and get those birds. But knowing the subject is the most important factor.
And so where it's, what its habits are and so forth, I assume.
Absolutely. You know what the habitat of the bird, how it acts, what it eats. You really have to become a natural history buff to understand your subject matter, to get good photographs of it.
And what are your plans now in terms of continuing a pursuit, your pursuit of the ivory bill?
Well, what I have done is I have established a foundation, the Ivory Bill Woodpecker Foundation. And the purpose of the foundation is actually to raise funds to keep people out in the swamps full-time searching for this bird. And not in great numbers. I'd like to have a few people, in different locations searching for the bird. But it's to get me out there full-time and to work on this bird. As I say, we don't have good documentation of the bird. We need to work on that. And then try to establish how many birds there are in other locations, if they're actually out in other locations.
And do you have a website?
I do. It's BobbyHarrison.com is one way to reach me, and the other, IBWFound.org. IBWFound.
Oh, .org.
.org.
Well, I tell you what, it's been a real pleasure to talk with you today, Bobby. I appreciate the visit and all your work with the Ivory Bill Woodpecker. Thank you so much for being with us today.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
Bobby Harrison of Huntsville, Alabama, an award-winning nature photographer, college professor, and in 2004 rediscovered the ivory-billed woodpecker in the swamp of eastern Arkansas. And I want to remind you, he's the keynote speaker for the Milwaukee Audubon Society's 27th Annual Natural Landscapes Conference. It's Saturday, February 17th at Cardinal Stritch University's Bonaventure Hall. And he'll be speaking at 9 a.m. in the morning. Now, there's a registration. You need to register for the conference, and you can do that in a couple of different ways. One way is to call area code 414-228-6308, 414-228-6308. Or you can email at MILWAUDUBON, in other words, Milwaudubon, at wi.rr.com. And I think if you put in Milwaukee Audubon into a search engine, you're probably going to find it pretty easily. Cardinal Stritch is located on Yates Road in Milwaukee. Parking is free. There's a charge for the conference itself. It's a day-long conference. It includes a complimentary continental breakfast. And in addition to Bobby's speech, with lots of different topics that are going to be discussed, including landscaping naturally, restoring the landscape, cultural heritage of the landscape, variety of topics to be explored, invasive species in your yard to non-pesticide methods of turf care, and from protection strategies for Lake Michigan estuaries to the ecological importance of woodland restoration. I know the past Native American use of birds to their building of effigy mounds in Wisconsin is going to be discussed. In other words, there's a lot there. And if you're at all interested, I hope you'll go online or to the Milwaukee Audubon Society or give them a call at 414-228-6308. Appreciate having Bobby Harrison with us, and looking forward to our next guest, Faye Jones, who's going to be talking about the 18th Annual Upper Midwest Organic Farming Conference. This year it's titled Cultivating Integrity. It's an interesting title. We'll find out some more about that as we visit with Faye. Coming up next year on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.